Participants in a popular civics education program for high schoolers say this year's event was marred by a culture of fear and shame. State officials consider withholding funding from libraries offering materials they see as controversial, and a new exhibit chronicles the colorful life of an Arkansas music icon. Those stories and more are coming up this week on the News Wrap from the Arkansas Newsroom. I'm Daniel Breen, News Director of Little Rock Public Radio. Each week, we're recapping the top stories from all across the Natural State. We'll unpack the headlines, share exclusive insights, and provide the context you need to fully grasp the issues that matter most to Arkansans. That's this week on the Arkansas News Wrap, coming up right after the news from NPR. This is the Arkansas News Wrap. I'm Daniel Breen with Little Rock Public Radio. The Arkansas State Library Board is proposing a new set of rules aimed at restricting certain content in libraries. Little Rock Public Radio's Maggie Ryan spoke with the Arkansas Advocate's Tess Verbin about her reporting on the subject.
So what is this rule, and tell us about what it means?
One of the biggest parts of this set of rules is that it would require libraries, in order to receive state funding, they'd have to segregate certain books that are considered sexually explicit and make sure that anyone under 16 can't check them out. They define sexually explicit as depicting or describing various sexual contact and behaviors or containing descriptions or images of human genitalia. Libraries would have to put those in a section where only people 18 and older can access them. There's an exception in there for kids as young as 11 to access content about the sociology of puberty. That's a phrase right out of the rules. They'd have to get parental consent for that. And that is the part of the rules that's getting the most attention. There's more in there about library leadership and training and things like that.
So whenever we're thinking about the definition of these sexually explicit materials, how are librarians supposed to determine that? Can you explain that a little more?
Library directors are saying that logistically, this would be really difficult to basically rearrange their shelves based on the content of books to make sure that, for example, a kid under 16 can't go anywhere near steamy romance novel aimed at adults because there tend to be sexual scenes in those books. And some libraries only have one room. It would be difficult to, according to librarians, police the ages of everybody who is in the library. And they already have a lot of responsibilities as librarians.
So what happens, what are the consequences if this rule passes and librarians or libraries don't comply?
That is not super clear. The rules don't actually specify how they'd be enforced. And I asked the Department of Education about that. They really didn't give me much of an answer. So, like I said, library directors are not thrilled with this proposal. They also took issue with a suggestion from the board that they change the software that lets people check out books and put like an age restriction on them somehow. So if you're a cardholder under 16, there are certain titles that it just won't let you check out. But not all software has the capacity to do that. That was something that they said might be a problem.
Okay, and so this has passed the State Library Board, which has a lot of new members. Is that right?
Okay, so it's a 7-member board. Currently only 6 seats are filled, but they were all appointed by Governor Sanders. The board was overhauled by state law last year because there was some frustration from people in the legislature that the library board would not withhold funding from libraries that had certain books they consider sexually explicit available. There had been pushback from librarians for reasons already mentioned, and members of the library board in its previous iteration were not okay with that proposal. There was a member of the previous board, a former state senator, Jason Rapert, who was a big advocate for withholding state funds that way. And when a majority of the board wouldn't do that, he was calling for the board to just be dissolved entirely. There was a bill in the legislature last year that would have done that, but it didn't pass. And then the law to just reconstitute the board did pass.
Is this kind of a manifestation of what Republican lawmakers have been trying to do over the past few years, just through a different avenue?
It definitely hits some of the same notes. There has been a lot of push from conservative voices to make sure that kids can't access certain books they consider inappropriate. And inappropriate doesn't always mean containing scenes of sexual activity to them. In some areas, folks have said that kids shouldn't access books that depict systemic racism or any LGBTQ plus characters or topics. The carve out in these proposed rules for content about the sociology of puberty seems to be related to sex education. At the same time, some sex education books have diagrams of the human body in it, and that seems to contradict. It seems that it would be outlawed by the prohibition on such diagrams in these rules. So it's kind of a range of things that are under the inappropriate or sexually explicit catch-all phrases that you hear from some appointed or elected officials. And it's been going on the past few years, like you said, and it seems that the goal that people put forth is, well, then some libraries just shouldn't get funding if they don't comply with these restrictions on content. And that can happen on the state level with the board withholding funding if they've determined that a library hasn't followed those rules closely enough. Or sometimes on the local level, they put forth ballot measures and let the people decide.
Okay, so what are librarians and library directors saying about these proposed changes?
Well, on the one hand, it wouldn't be very logistically doable for the libraries themselves in terms of the space. They also say that it would be censorship to keep certain content away from people based on their age or based on any other reason. They say that's against the First Amendment.
So we should also note these rules aren't final and they're still accepting public comment via the Department of Education website, right?
Yes, you can comment online or in person on June 12th at the Department of Education building.
Okay, and the final deadline for public comment is June 15th. Tess, I also want to ask about what's happening in Saline County. So they've put forward a ballot measure for its residents to decide whether or not to cut about one third of the budget for their library system. Can you say a little bit more about your reporting there?
Yes. Saline County is one of those areas, like I mentioned before, where there has been pushback about the availability of any books at all about sex education, systemic racism, or LGBTQ people. 3 years ago, there were a lot of people coming to the quorum court meetings saying those books should not be on the shelves and calling for the library director to be fired. And she was eventually fired because the quorum court gave the county judge the power to do that. The former director sued over it, and that case will go to trial later this year. That is slightly off topic, but not quite, because as you said, there is now going to be a measure on the ballot in Saline County in November to cut about a third of the library budget. That third would be $1.4 million. That's a lot. It's a three-branch system. The third branch is pretty new, actually. And we haven't really been hearing a lot about the content of libraries this time. Instead, people who support the ballot measure are saying the library just gets too much money or that it'll be fine without a third of its operating budget. Folks who support the library say otherwise. They say just because a library has reserves doesn't mean that it will survive that much of a budget cut. They say the library has been financially responsible and that this is really just a completely unnecessary measure.
Okay, Tess, my last question for you is, you've been reporting on libraries and art in Arkansas for a while now. What's changed over the past few years? Have you noticed anything significant?
In Saline County, they're not the only local library debate that has kind of changed its rhetoric from the content on the shelves to how much money the library even gets. We've seen this in a few other counties. We've seen a few other ballot measures to try to cut library funding. We actually saw a successful measure in 2022 in Craighead County. The folks who were pushing for that ultimately successful measure that cut half the library's funding had started out by saying, you shouldn't have books on the shelves about LGBTQ people. There was a pride display at one of their libraries, and people got upset about it. That and there was a transgender author invited to the library for a presentation. So you saw the same people who were upset about that pushing for library defunding. It seems that in the past few years, folks have started to take a different approach because they realized that their first approach wasn't quite working. On the state level, with the library board getting reconstituted, the efforts to withhold funding from libraries based on content just didn't work. So it seems like they are taking an approach they think will be more successful because it's less content focused.
Okay, that's Tess Verbin from the Arkansas Advocate. You can find more of her reporting online at arkansasadvocate.com.
A popular civics education program for high school girls is facing scrutiny after over 70 staff members quit on the final day of the 2026 session. Little Rock Public Radio's Brooklyn Powell has more on the controversy surrounding Arkansas Girl State.
Julia McKee started going to Girl State in 2023. She was selected to apply to the program at the end of her junior year by her school's sponsor. McKee was chosen to be a Girl State delegate and spent a week-long session participating in a mock elections program designed to teach participants about U.S. civics policies. She says the connections she made during that session were what kept her coming back.
I went and I spent my first week there, and I absolutely loved it. I met some of my best friends there. I learned a lot about civics and government and policy, and I also met so many great people from across the state who were at the same part of their life as me. We had all just completed our junior year, going into our senior year, and just had a great time.
After the session, she was asked to return as a counselor, which she did for the next 3 years. She says Girl State, first and foremost, seeks to teach its delegates, that's their word for students, the importance of participating in government and speaking up for what you believe in. But she says the 2026 session felt different.
Just throughout the week, we had delegates dropping like flies, and it really broke our hearts because I love this program and I would not be the person that I am without it. So the fact that they hate it enough to call their parents to come get them truly just spoke volumes to how different this session had been versus our prior ones.
The American Legion Auxiliary is a national organization and hosts ALA Girls Nation in Washington, D.C. The 50 U.S. states host their own Girl State programs, which are run by a mix of staff and local volunteers with ties to the program. Arkansas Girl State ran during the last week of May and wrapped with a closing session for girls to reflect on their experience, hear from guest speakers, and swear in their elected officials. McKee says the closing session is usually marked by heartfelt goodbyes and tearful I miss yous, but this year, 10 longtime staff members publicly resigned, along with 74 out of 78 counselors, including Julia McKee. The counselors issued a press release alleging the program promoted, quote, a culture of fear and shame, and called for reforms. A few days later, Arkansas Girl State refuted the allegations in a statement posted on Facebook, saying they prioritize the, quote, safety, dignity, and well-being of every staff member and delegate. Even prior to the 2026 session, Arkansas Girl State was facing controversy. The deadline for Girl State applications this year was March 27th, which fell on spring break for many schools. The deadline for Girl State is also typically the same time as the deadline for Boy State, a similar program run by a different organization. This year, though, the Girl State deadline was a week later. School ALA sponsors, usually guidance counselors, are responsible for submitting students' applications. Around 150 applications weren't submitted by the deadline this year. Some Arkansas lawmakers said refusing to take late applicants meant punishing students for something out of their control. One of them was Republican State Representative D.M. Vaught. On April 23rd, Vaught moved to bar the 2026 Girl State session from using state capitol facilities if Girl State organizers didn't accept the late applicants. 2 days later, the Auxiliary Department of Arkansas released a statement on Facebook saying they were sad some schools missed the deadline, but they would not be accepting late applications. In previous years, the deadline has been extended. Even this year, the deadline for Arkansas Boys State was extended. Girl State told schools the deadline would not be extended for Girl State and refused to speak further with sponsors. They have not responded to Little Rock Public Radio's requests for comment. Democratic State Representative Ashley Hudson said Girl State's communication with schools was shocking.
Not only was there a lack of communication, but the communication that was coming to them was often pretty hostile. There were at least two counselors in schools that were brought to tears in conversations with people in the auxiliary who referred to this as, was it weaponized delay, weaponized incompetence, when these were truly people who were very busy and who made a mistake.
On April 27th, the Arkansas House of Representatives put forward a resolution to bar Arkansas Girl State from using their chambers. They urged the National American Legion Auxiliary to communicate with them. When no resolution was presented, Republican Senator Breanne Davis took matters into her own hands.
Since the auxiliary has chosen not to allow them to attend, we will be hosting the 150 young ladies here for our own elite Girl State this summer.
Ultimately, lawmakers did not bar Girl State from using the House chambers. After Davis presented her alternative, she rescinded the original resolution. Counselor Julia McKee said this disagreement made her nervous for this year's session. During the session, McKee says her anxiety only continued. She and her fellow counselors pointed to a number of issues with the 2026 session, saying the dress code was, quote, oppressive. They also stated the ALA staff, including Chairwoman Melissa Mangini, interacted disrespectfully with delegates and counselors and promoted a culture of silence.
There was one incident where a counselor was told that one of her delegates might have had a vape. And Harding is a smoke-free, tobacco-free campus, and it's frowned upon with the American Legion Auxiliary. So our chairwoman at the time walked into this girl's room at 1 o'clock in the morning and gave a visual search, essentially looking for this vape in the middle of the night, unwarranted, with really no cause, and we found no vape.
McKee says after the search, staff talked about sending the girl home. Girl State defended the incident in their June 1st statement, saying no search was conducted, but staff did respond to a complaint filed by a delegate regarding their suite mate. According to their post, delegates were not threatened with dismissal, and no disciplinary action was taken. The counselor's press release contradicts Girl State's posts. In their statement, Girl State said the dress code was fully communicated in writing before the session. They claimed delegates were not shamed because of the dress code. But junior counselor Carmen Campbell disagrees.
So many instances, it was always those women and us girls. We would try so hard to make sure our girls wouldn't be in attire that they would feel is inappropriate so that they wouldn't get dress coded. But if that did happen, just the way they went about it was very inappropriate oftentimes.
Staff repeatedly stated the importance of modesty and professionalism when speaking on the harsher dress code, according to Campbell. She says staff would make dress code announcements at unexpected times.
I mean, like, it was clear that they were seeking to put young women down for what they wore, how they acted, what they perceived as violations without even looking into the situation further.
Campbell says the saddest part about the Girl State post is how it has affected the delegates of this year's session.
They're sitting there being smacked in the face by the hard reality that grown women that were supposed to take care of them and nurture them for a week instead are sitting there and telling the public that they all lied.
Junior counselor Lexington Hines said the statement from Girl State was audacious.
To call everyone a liar, it shows us where their morals lie, and it shows us that there's no intent of accountability, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Both Hines and Campbell said they believe the behavior of Girl State staff during the session does not meet the standard of behavior for the national chapter of the American Legion Auxiliary. They say the women's comments during the session were inappropriate and made the delegates uncomfortable. On Facebook, the American Legion Auxiliary Department of Arkansas, which is separate from the American Legion Auxiliary Arkansas Girl State, says all concerns are under review. Hines commended the Auxiliary Department of Arkansas for their response, but said she still has questions about how Girl State leaders will be held accountable.
Even if we achieve some sort of change now, what stops it from happening again? Delegates, they sign a pledge. Counselors sign a pledge. What pledge does the ALA have to take? How do we make sure that they actually adhere to the pledges that we all have to take of just basic human respect and decency?
Senior Counselor McKee says she believes the message of encouraging girls to use their own voice was not accomplished to its full extent. In their post, Arkansas Girl State says they are committed to transparency, accountability, and empowerment of their delegates. The organization has not responded to Little Rock Public Radio's requests for comment.
That was Little Rock Public Radio's Brooklyn Powell reporting. A new exhibit at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville examines the life and times of an Arkansas music legend. KASU's Marty Scarborough spoke with curator Dina McLeod and contributor Brian Hembry about the exhibit titled This Wheel's Still on Fire, The Legacy of Levon Helm.
I'm so excited to help install this exhibit again because in the first time around, there were so many layers that we were discovering just for the first time. One example that I love so much is there's a road case that held his drums. And this road case toured all over the world with him. And on the side of the road case, there's this tour credential from the European tour of 1971. And Dina procured, I think from Turkey Scratch, from the archives, a copy of his passport. And it's dated like late April 71. And when we put them together, we realized he didn't have a passport until this tour was booked and he had to go get his passport so that he could go on tour with, you know, with the band. And just seeing those things come together, those are layers that you can't even put in the didactic information. But every piece that you look at connects to other pieces within Levon's life. And, you know, we would need 30,000 square feet to you know, take a line and draw all of those connections. But I think if you're a fan and you come a couple times, you're going to build on that layer upon layer upon layer thing. And I'm excited to see the layers, things that I didn't even notice last time it was up.
Well, I know many Arkansans are familiar with Levon Helm and his musical legacy, but there are some out there, particularly maybe some in the younger generations, who haven't been exposed to him and his music. So, Dina, I'll start with you. If you had to explain who Levon Helm is and his importance in American music, where would you start?
I think if somebody doesn't know who Levon was, or who the band was, if you mention Bob Dylan and The Last Waltz, then that tunes them in. And then you can go backwards and forwards from there as this is your stake. Okay, so you know Bob Dylan. The band was his primary band in the 60s. The Last Waltz was an amazing film that was a concert film. And then you can lead them into, you know, his film career and how he's influenced other musicians. I mean, within this exhibit, and the exhibit opened at the Folk Americana Roots Hall of Fame in Boston. And within the exhibit, we have interviews with Jackson Brown, Bruce Springsteen, Max Weinberg, Bob Crawford from the Avett Brothers, just a variety of musicians who people do recognize their faces for sure. I mean, everybody knows Bruce. Just talking about how they were influenced by and drew inspiration from Levon. And what I really threw out all of these interviews, whether it was with the Cape Brothers or Jackson or whomever, what really amazed me was they had a common response to, if you were going to describe Levon Helm in one word, what would it be? And across the board, it was authentic. He was who he was. He was a kid from Turkey Scratch, Arkansas, and he never pretended to be anything other than that.
That was Dina McLeod and Brian Hembry speaking with KASU's Marty Scarborough. This Wheel's Still on Fire, The Legacy of Levon Helm, opens on June 16th at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. And that's it for this week. The Arkansas News Wrap is brought to you by the Arkansas Newsroom, a collaboration between KUAF in Fayetteville, KASU in Jonesboro, and Little Rock Public Radio. You can find this week's episode on any of our station's websites. Until next time, I'm Daniel Breen, and this is the Arkansas News Wrap.